Hi, Pat, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Still hanging in.
All right. Well, we will begin. I'm speaking with Pat Schroeder. She's in Washington at her office. And, Pat, we would like to speak today about women's issues and women candidates during this political year. And I can think of no one better than you to speak to these issues.
I think my frustration is the issue list never gets shorter. It only gets longer. So hopefully we'll get some more women elected so we can change this place.
How long have you been in office now?
I am in year 20. At the end of this year, I've been here 20 years, which makes me the dean of the women. And I must say, as you reflect on that, one of the most discouraging things has been the lack of progress on so many issues that I really care about, issues that if somebody had told me when I got elected we'd still be trying to get through, I would never have believed it. But I think it's because we only have 29 women out of 435, and women are just women's issues are just treated very lightly here.
Can you identify some of the issues you're speaking about?
Well, all the work and family issues impact on women the most because women are the caregivers in most families. And we have a workplace that just doesn't recognize caregiver roles at all. In fact, you're penalized if you have to be a caregiver. If you call in and say your car broke down, oh, that's fine. If you call in and say your child care broke down or your spouse is terribly ill and you have to get them to the hospital, that is not fine. So it's very interesting that we have a totally non-family workplace. We also find that the tax code discriminates against women. Social Security still discriminates against women. Many pension systems, if you look at the health care, the women have not been treated very equally among national research. We're finally getting that turned around, but it will take us to the end of the century to know as much about women and disease as we know about men, and that's if we keep everything on track. As you know, we passed a civil rights bill that doesn't treat women equally. It gives them lesser remedies. It caps their remedies. It doesn't cap others' remedies. That should be modified. We also have the tremendous push on anti-reproductive choices for women, whether it's the gag rule. I mean, imagine a country that won't allow doctors to talk to women about the range of options if they're getting tax money, for crying out loud. It means family planning research being cut out. It means all sorts of things. So women haven't been taken seriously in the workplace, taken seriously in the tax code, taken seriously in any of these areas. I say to women, if they went to see an obstetrician or a gynecologist and he pulled out a little hand puppet and said, now we are going to do your exam, you'd walk right out the door because he wasn't treating you with any real respect. And yet that's how Washington has treated issues around work, family, women, their bodies, every other such thing, equal pay. It's been like they've wiggled a little hand puppet at it and not taken it seriously.
Now, 4 years ago, you made a run, or you put your hat in the ring for a while. Was it 4 years ago? Or
yes.
Yes. And why then? Why not now? Have you thought about it again? What are your thoughts about running for president or a woman candidate?
It's very interesting what the polls are showing. They're showing that women candidates are doing much better than males. People think that they're much more ethical, that they're not involved in special interests, that they're much more interested in the voters' interests, and so forth. But people also think that women aren't electable because they can't raise money. So it's kind of, on the one hand, they think, oh, gee, they'd be the best to represent me, but if I'm voting for them, I'm throwing the vote away because you can't elect them because they never have the money. That is especially true at the presidential level. Also, at the presidential level, you find there's a very high testosterone level that I just can't pass. We say President of the United States, Commander-in-Chief, Leader of the Free World. Well, we've never had a woman Secretary of State, and we've never had a woman Department of Defense head. And so people think, oh, well, women can't handle those roles. Whereas if you take Europe, some of their best kings were queens. I mean, look at Elizabeth I and Victoria and some of the Tsarinas, Catherine and so forth. They were all very tough. So you had those role models, but we don't have them here. So people think in the presidential area that women just can't do that job.
What discouraged you last time?
Well, partly looking at that, partly hearing people say, I agree with you on all the issues, I think you're the best candidate, but I'm supporting X because X I think is electable. That drove me nuts. Then also the difficulty of raising money. The presidential thing has become almost the selling of the office. You sell the ambassadorships and everything else almost, and I think that's totally wrong. But you see that to raise $40 million just is incredible, and I just plain couldn't figure out how I could do that in the way that I've always done it. I mean, as an incumbent of this many years, my average campaign contribution is still $35. That's PAC money and everything added and divided together. Very few members of Congress can say that, but I think that's how it should be, lots of little contributions. When you start trying to figure out how you raise $40 million at $35 a pop, you're in big trouble.
What's your opinion now of the Democratic Party and of your role in it? Do you think there's room for a third party now in the United States, a party that might be friendlier, more helpful, more supportive, more interested in the issues that you think are crucial?
I think we need two parties before we get three. My biggest problem with the Democratic Party is too often they've tried to look like the Me Too Party. And I think until we get two healthy, strong parties, how can we talk about having three? So I would hope that we would work on making the Democratic Party a whole lot more viable, aggressive, and so forth. And that's my role. To start a third party, and many people have tried it with some of the best of intentions, and I've, you know, always wanted them to succeed, but whether it was some of the Common Cause folks or many of the others who tried it, it is almost impossible. The amount of money you have to spend getting the infrastructure together in the 50 states and doing all those things is just mind-boggling. And I'd much rather spend the money on something that had more direct results.
What's your role right now in the Democratic Party? Will you have a role during the convention, or are you a power broker now, Pat?
Let me be perfectly honest. The Democratic Party would much prefer to have other women take more powerful roles than I am, because there's a lot of men in the Democratic Party, or a lot of women too, that when you look at our language and you see the word leader, the only word with leader in it that we've let women participate in is cheerleader. And so they get very angry with me because I won't be a cheerleader. If I think that they're wrong or they haven't emphasized the right priorities, I speak out. As a consequence, they don't think I'm trustworthy. So my role in the party is I am here, and I'm always trying to push them a little further, and they always want to treat me like I wore a bathing suit to church, and when am I going to grow up, and when am I going to cool down, and when am I going to stop this stuff? Obviously, that's not true of all. I mean, there's some who are very good in there with me. But as a consequence, the party isn't going to do anything for me, and I know that. I mean, and you know, that's fine. That's fine. That's the role that I've selected, is to be independent, to be questioning, and to really fight for the people. I'm not out fighting for the party.
Is there any candidate right now in the Democratic Party that you endorse or you feel has some affinity with what you think is important?
Well, I haven't endorsed anybody yet. I'm still waiting to see how they emphasize these different issues. It's been a disappointing period so far, I think. And, of course, the Clinton thing, the big joke in the cloakroom here is everybody's been waiting for someone to move the whole Clinton debate in front of the Senate Judiciary because they did such a wonderful job during the Clarence Thomas hearings that obviously they can wade right in there and solve this. I mean, Everybody's going, oh, God, this is so awful. When will this end? How do we get this whole thing focused on issues? That's what I hope we can. But it seems to be focused on everything but issues, and so therefore it's very hard for people to make choices who are interested in issues.
Do you think Bush is beatable?
I think he is beatable. And I think it's ours to lose. And it worries me a lot because at this point it looks like we're trying to contemplate seriously how do we lose it. I don't want to lose it. I want to win it. I think there's much too much at stake. Listen, we used to have three branches of government. Well, the Supreme Court's totally gone. I mean, that is a real political dog and pony show. So now we're down to two branches of government. Everything the House has passed, and we have passed some really wonderful legislation. Everything the House and Senate has passed has been vetoed, and we haven't overridden one veto. So we get a majority vote for family leave, for doing away with the gag rule, for doing all these different things, unemployment extension, so forth. And the president says, well, I don't care if you've got a majority, you don't have two-thirds. So 24 vetoes have been sustained. So really, we don't even have two branches of government. We kind of have like one and a third. And that's not how this system's supposed to operate. So we need to get people here with a spine, and we really need to start thinking about how important it is that we don't just turn this government over to a dictator rule.
What would your advice be to a woman candidate on any level?
Run. Keep a sense of humor. It's not easy, but keep a sense of humor. Don't wait for someone to ask. People don't ask you. You have to just go out and do it. And, you know, just remember who you are. Don't let people start whipping you around. The one thing I find is very few of us are good actors and actresses. And people find that out right away when you're not being sincere. So when you hear people saying, oh, do this, do that, do this, do that, really stay with your own instincts. I think most of your own instincts are usually the best anyway. And when you start trying to wet your finger and see which way the wind's blowing every day before you take a position, you usually end up getting in real trouble.
So stick to your guns, huh?
Stick to your guns. I think people respect someone who levels with them. I think they're so tired of slick politicians, and I call it political pollution, people who babble on about all sorts of things and really say nothing.
How long have you been now on the House Armed Services Committee?
Well, I've been on since I got here.
So the 20 years.
Woman on, and I've been hanging in there ever since.
How do you see the issues that you grapple with in that committee as related to women's issues or what we sort of identified as women's issues?
Well, first of all, you know, there's the very basic problem of getting women equal treatment in the military. That's been a long, hard push. And I've been working away at it, whether it was getting divorced spouses the rights to pensions or whether it's been getting women who are in the services treated equally or getting family issues front and center when the services say if we wanted them to have a family, we would have requisitioned one. That's their problem. You know, so those are all big issues. But right now, today, if I had to say what is the biggest problem in defense, the biggest problem is in the president's State of the Union, he never mentioned the C word, conversion. Look, the bottom line is what President Eisenhower warned about happened. It happened. We became a military-industrial power. We don't make anything but military weapons, really, anymore. And so as we see that cranking down, we see all sorts of people losing their jobs. And just giving them unemployment is not what they want. They want also the opportunity to convert these job skills, the training, the ability, the research and development into products that the world will buy in the consumer market. Now, other countries have been able to do this, and we're able to do this. But he doesn't even mention it. It's just he's going to stop all these things. All these people are laid off and out on the street. I think it impacts women, because if these jobs all start drying up and blowing away, as they appear to be doing, then there's going to be even more backlash against women and minorities to get out of the workplace. You know, there's not enough jobs anyway, and so forth and so on. So it's very important that women get into this debate and say, how do we convert this economy so that we are making things that people will buy rather than just making toys for war that people don't need right now? So that to me is where we got to go, and we got to get in that debate and get in it fast.
Do you deal with these issues in the House Armed Services Committee in terms of, say, Lowry Air Force Base or Rocky Flats?
Absolutely. I mean, we ought to be talking about how we're going to convert Rocky Flats. I was the one who passed the legislation that all the Rocky Flats workers will have the right to the cleanup jobs first. I think there's a lot of cleanup technology there that we can learn that would be sellable all over the world, because everybody's trying to clean up stuff. So let's make this into a marketable skill. Yes, I think we have to think about that at every single level. But the Armed Services Committee is a very important point for this discussion to begin. For years, nobody wanted to talk about it. I tried to have conversion hearings in Denver. I've introduced bills, everything, and people want to just brush it away, saying, no, we don't want to think about it. We don't ever want to think about the Cold War being over. Well, the Cold War is over, and a lot of people didn't think about it, and we have a lot of ground to catch up.
Are you dealing with it now in that committee? Or?
Well, I've just spent 5 hours today and 6 hours yesterday trying to get the committee to deal with it. They're all beginning to understand. I'm trying very hard. But we need, like, the university working on it. We need entrepreneurs telling us what it takes to get them interested in starting plants that would do this. We need plants that are already there, looking at all the different research and development that's been done and tell us what could be used to convert into new ideas. Look, the Japanese, the Germans have been coming over and buying patents on our defense budget forever. They've been buying them and then taking them home and making them into products none of us could live without. Well, then it's about time that we kept them here and made them into products the world can't live without. Because otherwise, what's in the president's budget's really kind of silly. All it is a more sophisticated way of trying to get us to go to the mall and spend money. And the problem is, yes, it creates jobs at the mall selling this stuff, but most of the stuff that people are buying didn't come from the United States. So it's a very limited ripple effect, and it's not dealing with the long-term issue of how do we get ready to compete for the highly skilled, highly educated, highly paid jobs that Canada and Europe and Asia are working on. If we want to compete with the developing world, great, we're on the right path. I don't. And I think women have got to get into this debate because it's very serious.
How do you feel about a sense of solidarity with women in the country now? Do you have that sense? Did the Clarence Thomas hearings do anything for that feeling of being united? Do you feel as if there's a strong women's constituency out there? What's your sense of that?
I think it's stronger. I think there's a lot more left to do. We're constantly improving. But I think very often women find that the first person to attack them is a woman, saying, why do you just care about women's issues? Well, I don't. But, you know, if we don't bring these things up, no one else does. I'm more than willing to let anybody else bring these up. Believe me. But I've been sitting here waiting, and it's funny how they never come up unless we're there pushing all the time. And working in other areas, too. But I hope women begin to understand that, and that we all start working more and more together. When you go read the suffragettes' speeches at the time they were trying to get women the right to vote, they were so optimistic that we would really use our vote very, very creatively and differently to bring ethics, good government, caring, all sorts of things into the system. I'm not too sure we've done that yet, and I hope that we begin to get a real breakthrough as we reflect on it, and maybe it'll finally come to pass.
Do you have an idea of why women have not progressed further in the political system in this country? We've had the vote for decades and decades now.
Well, I think we've allowed a lot of groups to whip us around. You know, there's been some groups who've said, oh, those women are out there trying to make sure you have to leave the home and go out and go to work. Sometimes people would believe that. When I first came, there were people saying that child care was socialism, and how could I be for that? That's what they had in Russia, and I think we're beyond that. There were people who were saying that the Equal Rights Amendment was going to increase the divorce rate and force us to use unisex johns and put everybody in combat boots. Well, I hope people are finally well-educated beyond that. But you find people who would believe it, who truly, truly would believe it. And that's very painful. As long as we've got a few people who are going to hang in there and believe it, we don't win.
Well, thank you for hanging in there.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate it very much. I think we need to have more discussions like this and really think about this in this year that's so critical to the nation's future. I mean, 1992... we either rediscover America's inventiveness or whatever, or we become the tired old world and not the exciting new world. I want it to be the exciting new world.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Thank you.
That was Congresswoman Pat Schroeder.